This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie, brought to you by Killer Podcasts, an Evergreen Podcasts network. I'm the titular Sean.
And I'm the very titular Carrie.
It's the show that takes you inside the unbelievable, the unexplainable, the macabre, and the bizarre, and tries to find an answer. Hi, Caroline. How are you?
Doing better.
Yeah,
doing better.
We're back from a week off. We took a little sick vacation last week.
And we were like, oh, we have an interview. We don't have to take a holiday break. Everything's good.
And then the holidays happened.
We all got sick.
Yeah, I assume some of our listeners, this will also be the case, because it seems like everybody's sick right now.
Yeah. So, not COVID for us. Probably a really bad sinus infection.
Well, my whole head was one gigantic obstruction, so that
feels
right, yeah.
I felt like I had a bowling ball on a toothpick.
And, I mean, you know, listeners heard me last week's little check-in and the week before.
And I couldn't even crawl over to the mic for that one.
Yeah, so, you know, my brain was fried, my body was fried. But we're back now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're
happy
back.
Happy New Year.
happy New Year, a couple weeks late, and we are, well, a week late, and we are starting with a banger, Carrie, starting with a really strange and sordid tale.
Mm-hmm.
To kick off another year of Ain't It Scary. Today, Carrie, we're talking about, well, I'm titling this episode Lobster Boy, The Violent Life and Death of Grady Stiles.
Ooh, I feel like it's weekly world news.
It has a weekly world news kind of a quality to it.
Love that.
And, you know, we're not pointing and laughing at the deformities or conditions of anybody involved here, obviously.
No.
But this is a carnival story. It's, well, really, it's a freak show story, and therefore it is a story full of colorful folks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're not here to judge them or to make fun of them.
Well, judge criminals, for sure.
Grady Stiles is a real piece of shit. We'll get to him in a second. But this story is, I think, a fascinating little peek into a mostly bygone world, this thing of traveling carnivals and sideshows, and freak shows in particular, a thing you don't really see so much anymore, so
probably for the best.
So let's take a tiptoe back into decades past, Carrie, and into the sordid world of carnival freak shows with the Lobster Boy.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty famous story. You've probably heard this story before.
I have. I definitely saw a long time ago, obviously, but like
There's an E True Hollywood Story, I think.
There's not an E.
I think there's an
He's
E.
He's not famous.
I think there's an E thing.
No, I think it was like a destination, investigation discovery thing, because this is a very memorable cast of characters. So I remember seeing something on TV about it.
Yeah, for sure. It does play well to a visual medium, because as Grady Stiles found in life, his appearance was striking.
Sure.
Grady Stiles Jr. was born on June 26th of 1937. He was the fourth child of Grady Stiles Sr., go figure, and his wife Edna. Now, as we've kind of hinted, like his father before him and five generations of Stileses before him, Grady was born afflicted with ectrodactyly.
Mm-hmm.
That's also called cleft hand. Or maybe more properly, more recently, split hand-foot malformation, SHFM.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, you know, genetic disorder that causes your hands to kind of form in a V shape, often missing some of the fingers, or almost as if some of the fingers are fused together in development. So sometimes, as in the Stiles boys' case, this gives the appearance of kind of lobster claws.
Now, doesn't the penguin in Batman Returns have this?
Yeah. I don't know if they use the word, do
no,
they?
No, I don't think so. But I think he has like
just
basically...
Just because I was born a little different.
Just, I think he has basically like three fingers.
Yeah, he has like flipper hands.
Yeah.
That's kind of like Grady Stiles Jr.'s hands, but he didn't have thumbs.
So he just had
two
kind
large,
of a V.
Yeah, two large fingers on each hand. So sort of a permanent live long and prosper Vulcan salute thing going on with no thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a crook. I'm sorry. He also had shortened legs that ended below the knees in sort of malformed tiny little feet that he was never going to be able to walk on and never did.
Oh, okay.
So Grady lived his whole life not being able to walk. He would use, he'd get around in a wheelchair generally, but apparently he often preferred, especially at home, getting around by just pulling himself along the ground with his arms, which he could do with shocking speed. And which, over time, pretty quickly lent him almost superhuman, like, upper body strength. So he's this really strong man with these sort of two-fingered, claw-like appendages at the end of his very, very big, strong arms.
I think there's always this kind of patronizing tendency of even the most the well-meaning people.
I'm right here.
No, to perceive someone with a physical difference or a mental difference as like someone to pity, you know, like, oh, you know, too bad for them. And maybe not believe that they could be capable of such terrible things just because they've had such adversity and, you know, we're sort of conditioned to think like, oh, that'll make you a better person and things like that. So, well, I mean, he's just this like, beastly guy, right? And he has this physical difference, and it probably makes people
give him a little more slack.
Give him more slack, and also just not expect the worst from him, you know.
But also, probably, and this, you know, can weigh on a person over time. Certainly, not expect the best from him.
Right.
You see, Grady Stiles Sr., as I said, also had this same condition.
Mm-hmm.
And he had capitalized on the bad hand he'd been dealt.
Oh, Sean.
Sorry. By performing in a traveling carnival as the Lobster Man.
I mean, that's what a lot of people had to do when they had these physical differences. They couldn't get work elsewhere for one reason or another. And
well, in the
freak
case of
shows and sideshows were an option, even though they weren't a great option a lot of the time.
In the case of Grady and his father, you can't walk. It is probably a pretty difficult you adapt to use those hands, but they're not
dexterous.
They're not suited to all kinds of different work.
Mm-hmm.
So, he did what he could, and he made a pretty good living as the Lobster Man. Mm-hmm. And when Grady Jr. was just 7 years old, I think the other kids were born without ectrodactyly.
So he was the only one.
I think so, because the other kids didn't join the act. And dad was certainly, he was a stage dad. When Grady was just 7 years old, his dad started bringing him out on the road and putting him out on stage, too, as the Lobster Boy.
Of course.
So you've got kind of a lobster family going on, foreshadowing. The Lobster Family comes later. But right now you've got Lobster Man and Lobster Boy out there on the road. And this, at 7 years old, started an entire life for Grady Stiles Jr. of basically being pointed and laughed at for money.
That's such a hard life for a kid. I mean, I know he turns out to be a piece of shit. But like, as a 7 year old, that's so hard.
Yeah.
You don't understand things. And even when you do, it's there's a lot of people being terrible to you, I would imagine.
That's right. Let's talk about freak shows. Freak shows were really popular. They had become immensely popular over the course of the 19th century because, I don't know, they just kind of went very well with a very Victorian kind of, we're going to catalog all the information in the world and look at these rarities and oddities.
The morbidity and the curiosity of it all.
Yeah, and in that light,
She's got a beard. Can you believe it?
Yeah. Even paying customers lining up to fork over money to P.T. Barnum to see little people and, quote, living skeletons that were just like starving people.
Yeah.
And, a monkey sewed to a fish tail that he said was a dead mermaid. it almost seemed noble because it was this like pursuit of enlightened information and knowledge.
Yeah, it was weekly world news in real life.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it was seen, like upper class people were interested in this stuff too at the time. By the 1940s, when Grady Stiles Jr. was entering the biz, modern science was increasingly medicalizing these conditions and looking at these as possibly treatable conditions, and certainly not something that, you know, you're going to help by pointing and laughing at them. And so while this change was slow, as we, I think anyone familiar with everything, with history and culture in the 20th century, this change was slow, but everyone did start to look around at each other and feel bad about pointing at the dog-faced boy and laughing.
Yeah, as they should.
And maybe more honestly about ourselves, and more importantly, TV also came out and became pretty popular through the 50s, and that made it way easier to bring the wonders of the world into people's homes instead of having them, you know, maybe you'd go out to a traveling carnival or what have you. And if you think about it, Carrie, all of these like TLC reality shows and stuff, that's the freak show now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean... Step right up. You have the 1,000-pound girl and the giant pimple. Watch it be popped.
Exactly.
This family's all dwarves. This family's so big.
Yeah. I mean, they're just a top hat away from a full P.T. Barnum over on TLC.
Yeah. Well,
which almost makes me want to like them more, but...
The Learning Channel?
Yeah, The Learning Channel.
No, you don't want... I've watched too much Duggar content,
But just comparing them to my favorite liar in history,
Georgie Adamski.
No, P.T. Barnum.
Oh, you have a lot of famous or favorite liars, and that should probably concern me.
Well, sure. You have to start with Odysseus.
Oh, Jesus!
And
Christ.
You just go on from there. I should mention, just because listeners might remind us if I don't. Sideshows, I wouldn't say freak shows, but sideshows have made kind of a resurgence since the 90s in a postmodern, gothy, pierced kind of a way.
And there's a burlesque show on the side, too.
Exactly right. And with kind of a winking, look how old-timey and fun this is.
A lot of piercings. And
Didn't you go to that Flight of the Conchords, Dave Chappelle, like, comedy?
No, that was one of your other bitches.
No, not with me. I knew you didn't go with me, but I thought we had both gone to that show. Okay, never mind. They had at that tour, because it was themed around like circus stuff, they had a sideshow, and they had like guys pounding nails into their nose and a sword swallower.
Oh, yeah. I used to watch a bunch of those on Ripley's Believe It or Not. That was one of my shows that I would watch every week as a kid. Is that Dean Cain? there was always someone suspended from hooks in their back. And every time I watched it, my mom would walk in and walk right out.
Nope. She would nope on out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, dwindling popularity or no, with regard to the, you know, whole freak show scene, Lobster Man and Lobster Boy were a sensation wherever they went. And they were the central act of the show in all the carnivals they worked, and they made pretty decent money.
Now, what did they do besides have weird hands? Did they do anything? Any stunts?
Yeah, I think Grady Sr. would talk to the crowd, and he would go, look at my son and I's deformities. This is not the result of surgical trickery.
Okay, so that's a good 30 seconds.
He would explain that this was a condition that had afflicted his family for hundreds of years, and his son would kind of flop.
Did he crack walnuts? What did he do?
No, they would just kind of be there and be looked at, and they would flop around on the floor and show people how they could get around. And Grady, I think, would lean into kind of the bestial nature of this and like, arr, arr, menace.
Snap at people?
Yeah, menace onlookers and stuff, snap his claws at them.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the Lobster Man and the Lobster Boy. I mean, you got to give the people what they want.
It's a living.
So one day, while he was flopping around on stage and menacing the crowd, Grady caught the eye of a girl named Mary Teresa. Mary had run away from her home as a teenager, and she was now, like many runaways, working with the carnival. She wasn't a performer. I guess she was a grifter. And I don't have more detail than that, but that would mean, you know, she ran the little crooked guess your height games, mm-hmm. or she distracted marks while they got pickpocketed by other people who worked for the carnival, mm-hmm. generally talked people out of their money. She was a, you know, scam artist.
Okay.
But paid by the carnival to be one.
And she saw Grady Jr. snap it on the floor and thought, that's my man.
That's for me. Well, he's the star of the show.
Well, the younger one.
Yeah, this is the younger one, but it says he's coming into his manly age.
Very, like, teenage Groot situation.
He's ripped. Remember, he's friggin' jacked up top, and she sees him...
Arm day every day.
It's only arm day for Grady Stiles Jr., and she sees him crawling around up there, and she likes what she sees. So the two formed a quick bond, and before long, Mary Teresa was Mrs. Lobster Boy.
God bless.
Get mazel.
Mazel.
After Lobster Man retired, Grady became the sole star of the show.
Still boy?
Yeah, still Lobster Boy. Mm. You know, you've got a brand.
Yeah, of course.
You don't want to betray your brand. Mm-hmm. He would rebrand in a few years when he had some kids of his own. Don't worry.
I was petrified.
We talked about how hard this must have been. And apparently Grady Jr. never betrayed hurt feelings or said he felt, you know, but he never talked about regretting his career choice or anything. But it couldn't have been easy to just make your living for, your whole life, for decades and decades, just being pointed at.
Being a freak.
Yeah, being a freak, exactly. And so while he never complained about it, Grady Stiles did start leaning pretty heavily into the bottle. Hmm. And Mary Teresa would later say it didn't take her too long. It was within the first year of their marriage that she realized the man she married had a violent temper.
I mean, men of his age and era already were not dealing with their emotions. And then you add in this whole other factor that he probably can't relate to a lot of people about. Maybe just his dad, and his dad's pushing him in front of an audience. Yeah, he's got a lot of repression, probably.
Yeah, you would imagine. And he's pouring it into the bottle, and as often happens, then his feelings would come out in violent outbursts. Now, this didn't stop the couple from having three kids, two of whom, Grady III and Kathy, both shared their father's condition. They both had ectrodactyly. They both had the hands, mm-hmm. the family hands. So a few years later, when they were old enough, Grady Jr. pulled the two kids into the family show business show. And throughout the 60s and 70s, they were making between, I guess, 50 and 80 grand a year, which is really good for the time, mm-hmm. Touring the country as the Lobster Family.
Mm-hmm.
So when they weren't touring the country and flopping around on stage, and my children and I are afflicted by a condition that has affected our family for hundreds of years.
Behold.
They would go to this place near Tampa Bay, a town called Gibsonton, Florida, which...
Oh, yeah.
What?
There's a lot of... there was, I don't know if there still is, like a big community of... circus performers and things like that down there.
Yeah.
I know from the X-Files, you see.
Oh, I see. I was like, how do you
but
know
that's from real life?
Gibsonton. Yeah, it was...
me knowing about sideshows? Yeah, it tracks.
For a long time, you're right, Carrie, Gibsonton was known as kind of the winter quarters mm-hmm. for basically, I guess, all of the carnival folk in the U.S.? Or most of them, or a lot of them?
Florida's a weird place, Sean.
Well, I read up on this. It was one of the few places with zoning for circus animals on residential property. So it was just one of the most convenient places to go if you had a bunch of circus animals.
Or are the Tiger King.
Yeah, sure. Well, I don't think he lived here. He should have. This would have solved his problem.
Probably.
In the winter, like the rest of the circus workers, again, basically across the country, from what I understand, Grady and his family would hunker down in a mobile home community called Bullfrog Creek in Gibsonton and wait for the next season to start. And Grady would drink.
Just like all winter.
Yeah, pretty much his main activity. Neighbors would later testify that they frequently heard screams from the Stiles home. Mm-hmm. Grady drank whiskey, apparently. Mary Teresa would later say her husband was a really great guy when he was sober, and that was exclusively between the hours of 8 and 10 in the morning.
Oh, God.
He also was smoking.
And he's just smashed the rest of the day?
And smoking cigarettes just end to end. He smoked 60 cigarettes a day.
Oh, my God. And then he must have been flammable.
Well, with the breath. And well, flammable and with a fire yes. next to his face all the time. Once he was good and blitzed, the slightest provocation, backtalk, an imagined look, you know, he thought you looked at him the wrong way, would cause Grady to, he'd be sitting in his wheelchair or on the sofa, and then he would throw himself onto the floor and crawl across to you and throw himself at the offending family member, using his claw hands to choke them.
They're probably massively strong.
Yeah. Again, he has these big python arms, and he's just slapping, whacking, and choking with his claw hands. And apparently one of his favorite tactics was gouging at your eyes.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. One time, he was assaulting his wife, he was assaulting Mary, with such violence that Kathy, his daughter, who was pregnant at the time, tried to stop him by rolling her wheelchair in between her two parents.
Uh-huh.
And then Grady turned his rage on her and beat his pregnant daughter so badly that he induced labor. The baby was born safe and healthy, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
Also with ectrodactyly.
What a monster. I mean, like, on the one hand, you're sort of looking at yourself, thinking of this guy coming at you, like, with these claws, like, trying to choke you, yeeting up from the floor, no legs. And so you're like, no, you shouldn't judge, you know, like, don't think it's freakish, but like he's making himself a grotesquerie.
Yeah, well,
like it is monstrous.
As he had done professionally for so many years. You're right, it is. It is something out of a horror movie, the image of him like quickly dragging himself across the floor toward you.
And then just like shooting up at you is, oh, God.
By 1973, Mary Teresa had had enough. She claimed, this is brutal, that the last straw was when they were having a fight and Grady had used his claw to rip out her IUD.
Oh my God. What? Ugh.
Ripped out her IUD. He's got very long fingers.
Oh my God. I'm crossing my legs so hard right now.
I literally can't imagine, but I know that when they're put in and taken out, you know, surgically
yeah,
it's not easy.
Oh
so.
My God. What a monster. Ugh.
So you can't blame her for leaving the nest after that.
No.
But unfortunately, this would leave Mary Teresa's children completely at the mercy of Grady's violent rages as now his only targets.
Yeah.
And he apparently only became angrier and more controlling when he heard Mary Teresa had gotten remarried. Mm. By the way, she got married to Harry Glenn Newman, who was also a circus performer. He was a little person who was billed as the midget man and the smallest man in the world.
Huh. She has a type.
She loves a performer. She loves the star of the show.
She does.
Grady, for his part, actually would also marry again, but it didn't last long. Can't imagine why. With serial killer stories all the time, they always have multiple
how
wives.
How are they scoring these ladies? I would imagine it has a lot to do with their proficiency for manipulation.
And the type of people, like they choose people who are easily manipulated.
Right, just like they choose victims, because these are victims in a way. And I think it's just a combination of, they probably love bomb at the beginning. You know, they know what they're doing. And then they kind of get you in the trap. But yeah, it's always shocking.
Well, this wife didn't take too long to wise up. I don't even have her name here. She wasn't around long enough for us to catch it. But with her gone, once again, Grady Stiles' children were left to bear the brunt of his rage. Mm-hmm. And when we come back from the break, we will see how that rage manifested itself in its most deadly form. And You might be glad to know at this point, Carrie, that we will eventually see some pretty severe comeuppance for Grady Stiles as well. So all of that after the break.
All right.
"3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast that holds weekly gatherings around the campfire. Let me tell you what you're going to get. You're going to hear stories about demonic possessions, prison stabbings, skinwalkers, glitches in the Matrix, cult leaders, missing 411, night marchers, Operation Paperclip, Mesopotamian devil worship, and so many monsters it'll give Kanye West a runaway for his money. Pop and meme culture also aren't off topic. A camp where laughs and scares are constantly competing for first place. We're just a group of friends, trying to bust each other's balls, find the best stories, and expand the circle in the process. 3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast, not for the faint or fragile of heart. Let's go."
Welcome back. When last we left you, we had just gotten to know Grady Stiles Jr. Carrie, what are your thoughts so far? Nice guy?
You know, it's again one of those situations where you feel bad about their circumstances, like a Gitto or a Manson, you know. But some people have had terrible circumstances and have become great people and helped the world and everything. You don't even necessarily have to do that. You could break even. But he just really leaned into being grotesque, being just terrible.
Absolutely. And with, you know, I think we could say the closest thing he had to a love of his life, Mary Teresa, having left for a...
After horrible physical abuse and mental abuse, for sure.
Extreme physical abuse for the smallest man in the world, Harry Glenn Newman.
Shocking that he was intimidated by the smallest man in the world in any way, or jealous.
Well, I think he was jealous. He wasn't intimidated. It's probably more of a slight to a macho drunk's ego.
Yeah. He's even shorter than me, and I have no legs.
I have half legs, and this guy's smaller than I am.
Yeah. What She'd rather doing? Be with him.
I promised we would get to the most violent repercussions of Grady's violence, or of Grady's drunken rages before the break. And we are going to get to that now, Carrie. In 1978, 5 years after Mary had left, Grady's youngest daughter, Donna, fell in love with a boy. She was in her late teens at the time. And this young man's name was Jack Lane. And Grady, apparently, did not approve of the union. It was an underage marriage, so, you know, maybe that had something to do with it.
But not crazy at the time.
But not crazy at the time in 78. With the permission of the parents.
Yeah.
But more importantly, it, you know, Grady seems like a guy who liked control a fair bit. And
if anything, she was probably desperate to get away, and marriage is always the easiest way to do that in these kinds of situations.
And a Grady Stiles is going to see right through that, so he had refused to give his consent for the wedding, but they were going to go ahead anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, the night before the wedding, this is a little fuzzy, but Grady and Jack had arranged to meet and talk the night before the wedding, so one imagines maybe Grady had given Jack reason to think he had changed his mind, or that he could be convinced to give his blessing.
The manipulation.
So Jack Lane showed up at Grady Stiles' trailer to, you know, have this talk, and Grady immediately shot him in the back with a shotgun.
You didn't tell me he had guns.
Well, of course he had guns.
Yeah. He's a Florida sideshow freak.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Oh, my God. Shot him in the back?
Shot him in the back with a shotgun, yes. Killed him.
Oh, my God.
There was very little question about who had done this. It was a pretty open and shut case. Supposedly, when he told his daughter that Jack was dead, Grady had an evil grin plastered across his face. And she said he told her, "I told you I would kill him."
What a bastard. Oh, my God.
And thus we move to, in a way, one of the least dramatic trials we've covered on this show. Sometimes we make a real meal of a trial account because they're funny, or they're interesting, or the people are putting up impassioned defenses of why they did not do something that they clearly did. There's none of that here. Grady did plead not guilty to murder, But just because he was claiming he had shot Jack in self-defense.
In the back. Yeah, okay.
Kid, come at me.
Oy.
His legal team seems to have spent less time trying to prove the self-defense thing, and certainly no time at all trying to prove that he hadn't shot the kid. Everybody knew he had shot the kid. Mm-hmm. They were more trying to inspire pity in the jury, focusing on his condition and the life of mockery he had endured because of that condition, and the damage to his body that his lifetime of smoking and drinking had done.
Well, that was a choice.
It was a choice, but there's no question that Grady at this point already suffered from some pretty severe liver cirrhosis and emphysema from all of the smokes and whiskey.
Good.
His defense team also focused on his claims of remorse, which I'm sure were very genuine.
Yikes.
In the end, Grady Stiles was found guilty of third-degree murder. I don't know how it's only third. It seems so premeditated.
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon murder.
Third? That's like if you asked someone else to shoot a gun up in the air and they accidentally hit someone when the bullet came down.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was convicted of murder, but he was sentenced to 15 years probation when sentencing wrapped up in 1979. And that's mostly because there was literally no institution in the state that was set up to care for him.
He's all messed up anyway with the emphysema. Just let him die.
Just let him die on his own.
Wow.
But he wouldn't. He would live for decades more.
They usually do.
On probation, Grady would go through, I'm going to call them occasional bouts of quitting drinking. But for the most part, testimony from his kids later on suggested the violence was as severe as ever, if not worse and more constant.
Those poor kids. And he's the only parent still in the picture.
Yeah.
And Do they spend time with their mother?
I don't think she's been around at all. I think she's been hanging out with Harry Glenn.
I mean, on the one hand, you can't blame her. He was so physically abusive. On the other hand, you're like, well, you're kids, but it's such a hard line to walk.
And we're also at a point where these kids are adults. But even after...
But even you're trying to get away, and he shoots your best chance of getting out of there.
And that was Donna. Grady the Third and Kathy both have the same condition their dad does, so they're financially dependent on the show.
Yeah.
And therefore, their connection to their father.
Must have felt so hopeless.
Really tough situation, and we'll check in with Grady the Third a little bit later on in this show. He wasn't a fan of his dad. I think that's almost a direct quote, actually. Now, a decade into Grady's probation, so we're now in 1989, a once again single Mary Teresa waltzed back into his life. In the interim, she and the world's smallest man had conceived and had a son, Harry Glenn Newman Jr. Now, Harry was of normal height. He didn't inherit his dad's height, but he wanted to follow his father into the sideshow game. So he ended up making a name for himself as a blockhead.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the act where you hammer nails, or in Harry's case, he would do nails, but then his specialty was ice picks.
Oh, Jesus.
And what you do is you hammer these, for anybody who doesn't know, through the nostril and into the nasal cavity until you get the nail, you know, solidly just all the way in there, the head resting against your nose. The trick here is our noses look like they go up. Right, the nose bone goes up, so you go, oh, the nostril just keeps going up. But actually, the nasal cavity goes more or less straight back into our head. So it's
don't try this at home.
Well no. But I'm telling you how these circus performers do it is you can just insert an object straight back, and the main thing is your sneeze reflex will be triggered. But with practice, you can suppress that and eventually just tap a nail straight back until it hits the back of your throat.
It's kind of like the idea of sword swallowing. It's like you know the right technique to do it. You can do it, but if you don't, you'll really mess yourself up.
Yeah, well, and don't hit too hard with the hammer. I would say that, too. To the audience, even though the nail's just passing through a perfectly straight, perfectly safe channel, to the audience, it looks a lot like you're just pounding a nail into your friggin' head.
Yeah, to my mother walking in on me watching Ripley's Believe It or Not, that's what it looked like.
She faints away on the floor. Grady, at this time, was in the midst of one of his relapses of sobriety and managed to convince her that he was a changed man. Mary would later suggest it was at least partly motherly sympathy and maybe a little guilt for her children that brought her back. You know, so there was some other figure in this family. Mm-hmm. I probably don't need to tell you, but I will tell you that Grady didn't stay sober for long.
Yeah.
And pretty soon after the couple were remarried, the violence had started again, just as bad as it ever was. So by 1992, 3 years later, Mary Teresa had once again, well and truly, had enough. After a particularly violent outburst from Grady, she reportedly said to Grady III and Glenn Jr. that, quote, something needs to be done.
Okay.
What happened next? Accounts differ. On a 2014 episode of the AMC series Freak Show, you might have been watching this with your mom. Your mom might have walked in on you watching
this.
Oh,
yeah. I was going to say, she wouldn't have watched that with me.
Grady III said that Glenn heard their mother's comment. She just made an offhand comment. Glenn heard her say that, took matters into his own hands, and mentioned to a neighbor kid, 17-year-old carnival worker Chris Wyant, who... also did have some local organized crime. I mean, he was like a criminal kid. He like had connections to gangs in the area. And so Glenn went over to him and told him that, quote, something had to be done.
Okay.
And Grady says, my brother thought that meant scaring him or beating my dad up or something to make him realize he was going to lose his family.
This is like a game of murder telephone.
Well, yeah, that's what Grady says. But when Glenn eventually confessed in a police interrogation... he added that he had also given Wyant $1,500 that his mom had given him, along with instructions to bring things to a, quote, beneficial conclusion.
So they're trying to have this teenager, like, perform a hit on him?
Yeah. I mean,
the justice system did fail them miserably, so...
So $1,500 is, like, more than $3,000 in today money.
Yeah.
And it does sound like a big payday to just scare somebody, you know.
Yeah.
I think this is probably a hit, yeah. In case it needs to be said, and I mentioned this before, but Grady Stiles, yeah, said he is, quote, not a fan of his father. He said he was racist and abusive. And he said, when I cried, he was like, I'll give you a reason to cry, which I think my dad said that.
Sure, but he didn't have, like, beefed out pincers trying to rip out your eyeballs while he did it.
No, not once.
Just the one time, actually.
So Grady Stiles Jr. was sitting in his underwear in his trailer, smoking, as always, a cigarette and watching television. When Chris Wyant watched through his window for a little bit before bursting in with a semi-automatic pistol and shooting him twice in the head.
Okay.
He was dead. That was the end of...
You know what? I wasn't sure because it feels like he's like a bad penny, you know? You have to... Yeah, you have to... You burn him, you poison him, you have to do the whole thing.
You throw him into the river.
Yeah, I was expecting... And then he got up and he went at it after him and... Okay, so he's dead.
No, in a way, and maybe this... You know, maybe this makes you reflect on the way we all end, Carrie. this incredibly weird and sordid story ends... Like all stories do, a little anticlimactically. It's two shots in the head, and that's it for Grady Stiles Jr. He was so widely disliked in his community that reportedly only 10 people attended the funeral. They couldn't find a single person willing to serve as a pallbearer. So that job had to fall to grave diggers and the funeral director.
That's brutal. That's a brutal indictment on a life right there.
Yep. Yep. If we are the people we leave behind, then Grady Stiles wasn't much.
And that would have been an easy coffin.
Yeah. Well, it's short anyway.
Well, I mean, it's just certainly not as heavy.
He
only needed a couple pallbearers.
Remember, he's Stallone up top. He's got pythons.
I know. But still, couldn't even scrounge up one.
Now, the police do have to investigate a murder, even when everybody really hates the guy. They can't just go like, well, he sort of deserved it, so it's fine. And obvious suspicion fell on Grady's family, because no one had more of a reason to hate the guy than them. Glenn Jr. spectacularly failed a polygraph, which led to the aforementioned interrogation. And that led to Glenn folding like a moving box and spilling the entire story immediately and putting Chris Wyant and his mom in the frame. So the three of them were all arrested and all charged with murder. And in 1994, Chris Wyant was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 27 years in prison. He was released in 2009, but I have no idea what's happened to him since then. Mary Teresa was convicted of manslaughter and conspiracy and sent to prison for 12 years.
She got more punishment than Grady did even actually shooting a guy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He shot a guy right in the back.
Wow.
Manslaughter and conspiracy, 12 years. She would eventually, she was released in 2000, though, so she served six.
Still more time in jail.
Because he spent none.
Yeah.
And she returned, against all odds, to Florida.
Oh, I don't think there's a lot of odds against that.
See, everybody returns to Florida.
Well.
And Glenn was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life. I don't know why when he wasn't the trigger man, but he gets the first-degree murder sentence.
Did Chris, like, plea or something? And, like, turn...
None of them took plea deals. Everyone went to trial.
That's really weird.
Yeah, Chris got second-degree murder, 27 years. Glenn got first-degree murder and life plus 12.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't think that's typical. Even if he was the one that put out the hit and it was just him, he's still not the person who actually pulled the trigger.
Yeah, it might be... Maybe they managed to sell the story, at least partly at trial, that maybe it wasn't what Mary had meant and that Glenn had taken matters into his own hands.
I don't know. That's weird.
Well, he died behind bars in 2014.
Florida, man.
Florida, man. And that's the story of Grady Stiles Jr. That's again, I called it a sordid tale.
It is sordid. He was a sordid man.
He was a sordid man. We're probably we're all better off that he's gone.
Don't do murder, kids. But also, you know, don't physically abuse people.
And you're right, Carrie. There's something deeply unfair about all of those people serving more time than Grady himself did.
Right.
But it does put another nail in the same lesson, I guess, kids. Don't do murder, even if you have a really good reason.
Yeah, official stance of the podcast. Don't do murder.
Twenty-four hours ago, I found out the person that I'd been dating and seeing for the last 6 months as a con man.
That is my sister Emma. Andrew Tonks' lies had been so convincing, she'd invested $300,000 with him. However, the tables were about to turn on Andrew. What he didn't know was that Emma had discovered his real identity. But to get any chance of justice, Emma had to act like it was business as usual. Coming up in this series...
And that's when murder, all this stuff goes through my mind. I'm really, really scared.
I'm assuming Sarah has watched too much Netflix and figures I've been defrauding you. Couldn't be further from the truth.
That's what this was, a real life story that seems so unbelievable, but it was actually true.
A true story that all starts with one simple swipe to the right. I'm Sarah Ferris.
And I'm Emma Ferris, and this is my story, Conning the Con.
It's time for a Crying Saucers Lizard People Big World crossover.
Crossover!
Friends, our usual top of year prediction roundup will have to wait another week because this next story is one of the craziest things I've seen in the last couple months.
Wow. Now, I've kept myself as virginal as I could on this story.
Oh, don't. Ew.
It's been all over the internet. But yeah. I have tried not to spoil myself.
Because you knew I was covering this.
Because I knew you were covering it on the pod and I wanted to be fresh. So lay it on me, Carrie. What is this amazing sighting?
A conspiracy theory is spreading online that little green men are among us. Or maybe tall green men. And their first stop was Miami, baby.
Well, sure, it's a beautiful city. Great food.
After a huge contingent of police responded to a reported brawl occurring at the Bayside Marketplace Mall on New Year's Day, some started to theorize that the intense police presence was not because of a fight, but because of a shadow alien invasion that had begun at the shopping outlets.
Define shadow alien. Is it shadow aliens or is the invasion the shadow?
They keep calling them shadow aliens, shadow alien invasion. I don't know why they're calling them shadow aliens.
Maybe the invasion's the shadowy part because the government's keeping it quiet.
Well, that's the thing. Several overhead videos of the scene were posted to social media, and in the footage, many pointed out that they saw strange-looking figures on the roof of the mall. To these posters, the figures appeared to be 7 to 10 foot-tall creatures of some sort.
Ooh.
So maybe tall, skinny grays. And some of the videos attempted to highlight the figures in question. Now, to me, I can't really quite make anything specific out of the main video that was really highlighted for this. Looks like something maybe larger in height moving on the mall's roof. But Sean, what are your thoughts? Here's like, and they're all always, you know, filmed on a potato, these videos. It's like that. See it? Play it again. And that's like the roof, I guess.
Well, there's definitely some kind of a distortion there, but I'm not even sure if it's a solid figure.
Well, here's another angle. Can you make anything out a little better there?
Yeah, that one actually looks like he has a little hand going.
So to me, and to a lot of people, this looks, and again, it's so potato quality. This looks like three people walking in formation.
Oh, interesting. Let me see it move.
Like literal three dwarves in a trench coat sort of thing. but like walking side by side. You can kind of see
different feet,
I think.
Yeah, because that's not a wall next to them, is it? It's more like a slope or a staircase.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with the area, but yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, if that thing was a steep pyramid or a wall, then it would look like a thing moving in front. I think it's an optical illusion. I think you're right.
Now, admittedly, the police presence was pretty massive considering it was officially reported to be just a bunch of teenagers fighting and lighting off fireworks at the mall, and that's what a few arrests were made.
Well, that can bring a lot of police depending on how bored the police are and the color of the teenagers sometimes.
Well, yeah, there's that. Now, it is New Year's Day, so you have to imagine that the police are probably on high alert, maybe still worried that people are, like, drunk driving and stuff. I was thinking maybe, because there was, like, 60 police cars that responded to this. People were saying, that I've never seen a response like this, even in Miami, even in this city.
There's, like, really intense, terror security around big holidays. Do you think they overreacted?
That, or they thought it was a shooting. Maybe that was their first... report because there's fireworks and screaming and stuff. But that doesn't explain some of the other alleged events that supposedly happened the same night.
Ooh.
TikTokers, such as the account Bro Bible, so you know it's serious, shared that, quote, during all this craziness, police scanners were cut off, all plane flights were canceled, and more than 60,000 homes lost power due to this. However, Officer Michael Vega of the Miami Police told CBS News that, quote, there were no aliens, UFOs, or ETs, no airports were closed, no power outages. So rumors were spreading. Some people were saying that, oh, I was there and they, you know, were covering things up. And then some other people said that they were lying. And, you know, it's been a back and forth. And it hasn't stopped the speculation. Quote, I don't know if the rumors about the aliens at the Miami Mall are real, but I do know I've never seen this many police in one place, one Twitter user wrote, and no, I will not call it X. Quote, everybody have cell phones, but nobody have an up-close video of the 8 to 10 foot alien by the Miami Mall, another user posted. Even Captain Kirk himself responded to the news. Oh. So apparently space aliens visited a mall in Miami, William Shatner tweeted, followed by a series of emojis.
What were the emojis?
They were like pondering and like kind of curious ones and like maybe disbelieving ones.
So he's into it.
You know, he's Captain Kirk. He's got to respond to aliens, I guess. It is admittedly strange, as many have pointed out, that such a situation that warranted such a huge response. No private citizens on the scene took video, or at least have posted video, from inside the mall or up close. Again, making many to cry cover-up in this situation. So that's kind of the story right now.
But couldn't that also just mean there wasn't anything interesting happening?
Yeah, of course. But when have you seen people say, oh, this isn't that interesting, I'll put my phone away?
Yeah, that's true, especially when there's 60 police cars.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting enough. So that is strange, but who knows?
Well, it's fascinating, Carrie. I'm convinced.
Well, if nothing else happens between this week and next week, knock on wood, we'll do our Nostradamus predictions. We'll do our Esperomancer predictions. We'll see how 2023's predictions played out or not.
I forgot about the Esperomancer. She predicts the future by peeing on stuff?
No, she throws the asparagus in the air and then they fall. It's kind of like
The I Ching. I Ching.
No, that's Poe.
I Ching.
No, it's like casting bones, you know, like sticks.
Or it's like consulting the I Ching. I keep saying that honestly by accident, but to explain to the listener, I do flip our dog over sometimes and say I must consult the I Ching.
Yes, because he's a little king. Yeah, sure. It's like that.
I mean, I Ching is what
it's like you looking at Poe's belly and divining meaning, as we all do.
There's no word that I can find more meaning.
That's it for this episode of Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ain't It Scary, and check out our website at ain'titscary.com. You can support the show by supporting our sponsors and becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/ain'titscary. You can call us and leave a message at our Google Voice number, 203-666-5529. And please subscribe to the show and throw us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and also on Spotify. We'll be forever grateful.
We certainly will be forever grateful. And special thanks to those of you already joining us on the top couple of Patreon tiers. Sean O'Donnell, Jared Chamberlain, Maria Ferrante, Robin McCabe, Comfy Mike, Alex Nakutis, Ryan Regan, Christy Atchison, Kate Pope, Haley, Ryan, Enrique, Ira, Pete, Anna, and Delaney. I can't speak for Carrie, but you're my favorite people in the world.
See you next Thursday.
Show created by Sean and Carrie McCabe. Music by Kyle Ryan. You can find Kyle at his YouTube channel, Music is a Verb.
Ain't It Scary has been brought to you by Killer Podcasts and is a production of Longboy Media. Eking.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence and give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.